Hey, it's Dan here. If you haven't heard, the Fun Kids Science Weekly is back and bigger than ever. We hear all about the biggest stories in the world of science.
And so they realize, oh my gosh, I think what we're seeing is a newborn great white.
Find out which science is the best.
Wow, I thought that just sounded like such a cool career that I could get out there, visit different places in those different environments.
Put your questions to the experts.
How does a mobile phone contact another mobile phone without a wire?
Remember to send in your questions on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. That's the bigger and better Fun Kids Science Weekly every Saturday from wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hello everybody, and welcome to Mysteries of Science. My name's Dan, and I'm the editor of Science and Nature, the monthly magazine from the team behind The Week Junior.
And I'm Michael, the features editor. Science helps us to understand the universe, but there are some strange cases it still hasn't solved, including this one.
Ooh, we're hiking in the Himalayas, which is a mountain range in Asia, and we're on the lookout for a strange beast known as the Yeti, or the Abominable Snowman.
Tales of a large, hairy, human-like creature living in these parts have been going around for over 2,000 years.
But where do these stories come from? And could such a giant actually exist?
Dan, what was that?
I'm not sure. This is Mysteries of Science! Right, Michael, if we're going to find the Yeti, I think we need to know what it is and what it looks like.
Well, Dan, in Tibetan folklore, there are a few different types of Yeti. So the largest of these is the Nyalmo, which is said to be 4.5 metres tall and have thick black fur, while the smallest, at a mere 1 to 2 metres tall, is the Rangshimbombo, which has reddish-brown fur. Though the image that you might be more familiar with is the one you might have seen in films like Monsters, Inc., of a large bipedal ape with a thick white coat of fur. Bipedal means walking on 2 feet.
Yeah, that's what I think about when I imagine a Yeti. So where did that image come from? And also the name. Where did that name, Abominable Snowman, come from?
So a British journalist called Henry Newman was actually the first person to call it the Abominable Snowman. He was climbing Everest with some Sherpa guides. Sherpas are people from Nepal and Tibet who are native to the mountain range. And they came across some large footprints in the snow. Now, the Sherpas said that these belonged to the Meto Kangmi, which is Tibetan for man-bear snowman, but Newman mistranslated this to the Abominable Snowman. Now, this was all the way back in 1921, but it's far from the most recent sighting.
And what does abominable mean?
So abominable means very bad or unpleasant. So it's the very bad or unpleasant snowman.
So not quite Frosty the Snowman. The very bad and unpleasant snowman doesn't sound too nice.
For Frosty the Snowman's evil twin. Yeah. And in fact, as recently as 2019, the Indian Army actually shared photographs of what they claimed to be Yeti footprints in the snow.
Okay, so that's the story. But what's the science? I mean, or is there even any science around this? Are we asking here, could the Yeti actually exist?
Well, I think to get to the bottom of this, we should speak to an expert in both new and extinct species.
Great idea.
I'm David Roberts. I work at the University of Kent in the Durrell Institute of Conservation and Ecology. There I do teaching, but in terms of my research, I work on questions around extinction and particularly how do we know if a species is extinct. But one of the other areas I work on is illegal wildlife trade, and so I do quite a lot of work in that area.
Hi, David. Thanks for joining us on the show. Can you tell us, how do we know whether or not the Yeti actually exists?
You know, in terms of the evidence for the Yetis, you know, there are supposed footprints and there is supposed hair and so on. As far as I know, you know, I haven't seen anything that has conclusively said that this is a new species. And so at the moment, there isn't the evidence. You know, often when we think about new species and how likely it is, we have to think about the process of which we discover new species. And when I say discover species, I'm talking about it from a scientific point of view. You know, a lot of local communities know the species has existed because they live with it. But in terms of being new to science, you know, we tend to find species earlier that are large because they're more conspicuous, that occur, you know, closer to where we live because we have more chance of, you know, bumping into them, and tend to be have a large geographical range, so they occur over a large area, and therefore we have a greater chance of bumping into it. And so there are certain things that we, you know, we often look at when we're kind of assessing these supposed new species.
Okay, so according to David, there are three things that make discovering a species more likely. One is if the proposed species is very large, because that way we're more likely to spot it.
Yeah, okay, that makes total sense to me. And according to the stories, the Yeti is quite big.
But there's also what he was saying about proximity, how close we live to the species and how large an area they cover. So the closer we are, we're more likely to see them. Or if they live over a wide area, then we're more likely to see them.
Yeah, being high up in the remote, freezing cold Himalayan mountains does make them quite hard to find, I suppose.
So tell us, David, what do we need to see? What piece of evidence do we need to know that the Yeti is real?
A specimen, you know, would be the ultimate. A specimen with DNA would be kind of the ultimate evidence for its existence. Although, you know, I don't think it would necessarily be a good idea to go out and shoot Yetis and things like that to discover them. You know, there's new species of primates that are now being described based on photographs, you know, the good quality, clear photographs and DNA evidence. So, you know, I would say you would need good, solid photographic evidence where we can see, you know, diagnostic features as well as DNA evidence. But they need to be linked together. You know, the alternative is, of course, species do become extinct and animals do die, unfortunately, and so whether or not there is a, you know, some sort of carcass or remains that could be found.
So DNA, which David was talking about, is a chemical that is contained in almost every cell of almost every living thing on Earth, and it carries the instructions for how that living thing will grow and develop. And you can get DNA samples from, you know, almost any body part. And without any of those for the Yeti, it seems like we've hit a brick wall. So time to give up, Michael. Leave this cold place and go and get a cup of tea. Mystery solved.
Not yet, E. Not Yeti.
I see what you did there.
What if I told you that we could speak to a scientist who actually did DNA analysis on supposed Yeti body parts?
Ooh, tell me more.
Hi, I'm Charlotte Lindquist, and I'm an associate professor at the University of Buffalo in New York, the United States. And I am an evolutionary biologist, meaning that I like to study the history of various different kinds of organisms, even both plants and animals.
Thanks for joining us, Charlotte. So tell us, how did you come to study the abominable snowman?
So I've studied bears actually for quite a bit, including an ancient polar bear that was discovered in the Svalbard archipelago in the North Atlantic. It's north of Norway, and there was an ancient polar bear remains that was found that were dated to about 120,000 years old. So that was really exciting. So that got me into studying bear genetics. And then I was contacted actually by a British company that had been interested in looking at Bigfoot and Yetis and Sasquatch around the world. And there was actually a British geneticist, Brian Sykes, who had been studying sort of Bigfoot samples around the world, including samples from the Himalayan mountains. And he found they were closely related to my ancient polar bear. And that was sort of my entry into the world of Yeti work, basically.
Bigfoot If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, for a long time, you may remember we investigated Bigfoot way back in season one of Mysteries of Science. And what episode was that again, Michael? Remind me.
It was season one, episode 8, one of my favourites. And the Bigfoot and the Yeti are actually somewhat connected, with some people thinking that they might even be the same species of bear. And in the case of the abominable snowman, Charlotte might have discovered exactly what species of bear that is.
One of the reasons that I was really interested in getting into this is we know very little about bears, actually, in the Himalayan mountains and the Tibetan region. So that was really my interest in all of this. And I kind of saw my opportunity, so to speak, to perhaps get access to samples of bears, because it has been long been a theory that actually the Yeti is associated, the whole legend of the Yeti is associated with actually local bears in the region, but has never really been specifically tested. So we were able to get various samples, both hair and teeth and even a paw, various different tissue that local people associated with the Yeti legend. And we studied these genetically. And what we found was that pretty much in all cases, they turned out to genetically be from bears that live in the region. So brown bears and black bears that live in the Himalayan region.
That's so awesome. So Charlotte and her team have got parts of what people say are Yetis and analysed the DNA from these various body parts, but then found out that they actually belong to brown and black bears?
Exactly, and as a result of this, Charlotte and her team actually made some new discoveries about bears living in that part of the world.
Yeah, so it turned out that, and what was very interesting, so there's bears, brown bears that are found both in the Himalayan mountains, and that's also found in the Tibetan plateau, which is obviously a very high altitude region. And those brown bears in those two areas are actually quite distinct, quite diverged from one another, which is kind of interestingly, because if you look at a map, it seems like that those populations of brown bears seem to be at least geographically quite close, but it's clear that they have been isolated from one another for a very long time, for thousands and thousands of years. And that hadn't really been discovered before, so that was very interesting. And also that the brown bears in the Himalayan mountains seem to be a sort of a very early evolving or early diverging clade or population of brown bears, meaning that they have actually lived in isolation for a very long time, isolated from other brown bears. Brown bears are found, you know, across the world, across the northern hemisphere, throughout Europe and Asia and North America. And it was just quite interesting to find that this little population of these high altitude brown bears in the Himalayan mountains have been isolated from other populations for a very long time.
So even if Charlotte couldn't prove that the abominable snowman exists, she made a brand new discovery about how bears of the same species can actually be quite different, despite not living very far away from each other.
Yes, I guess it goes to show sometimes the biggest discovery you make isn't the one you expect. But maybe we're looking at this the wrong way. Maybe the Yeti does exist. All those sightings, all those footprints were real. It's just what we thought of as being a species unknown to science is actually a brown bear. And for many of these myths, whether it's Bigfoot or the abominable snowman, Charlotte thinks the answer lies in the local species and wildlife.
Yeah, I didn't start out really interested in the Yeti legend, but this was sort of both opportunistic, but also a very interesting, I guess, view on ancient legends that may really have a basis in actual local species and wildlife in the areas. And that might be something that's the case throughout the world, maybe even be leftover tales of wildlife or experience with wildlife in these remote regions.
So, well, for me, there's just one massive question here that's unanswered. Surely if they were just bears, then people would recognise them. They would know that they were bears, they know what bears look like, why would they think that they're entirely different species?
Well, we've spoken about where these bears are, so high up in the snowy Himalayan mountains where maybe visibility and oxygen levels are low, so it's possible people might have been hallucinating or imagining things that aren't there. Or, as David explains, they could just be seeing what they want to see.
I think one of the issues that we have is that often we want to see things that are rare, that are new, that are exciting, and we start adding features to explain what we see. I think there was an experiment at Loch Ness where they had a pole lying down in the water, and occasionally they would raise it up people would see it and wonder whether or not they'd seen the Loch Ness monster, and they'd get people to describe what they saw, and you could and in the drawings you could see people starting putting kind of head-like features on it when of course they didn't exist. And so I think there is an issue with species such as the Yeti that we, if we're trying to remember an event, or we start adding features that aren't really there.
Ah, Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster. It's another Mysteries of Science classic. Season 1, Episode 1. How could I forget that one? And another Mysteries of Science classic is our old friend, the Mysteriometer, Michael. Let's pull it out again. As you know, this is a scale of 1 to 100, entirely invented by us. Zero being we know nothing about a mystery, and 100 meaning we know everything and the case is closed. So, where do we stand with the abominable snowman? Let's find out.
I would probably say we're you know, 95% certain that it doesn't exist, probably 99% certain it doesn't exist, just because it's so unlikely. But, you know, as a scientist, it's very difficult to say something with absolute, you know, 100% certainty. And so there's always that little bit of uncertainty that we always add in.
That's probably a little bit of because we never know, right? We only know what we have in hand and what we have studied so far. We don't know what we have not discovered. And that's what I find so exciting about science. We learn things all the time. But me, from my standpoint and my experience with this, I would say that this is a closed chapter. We know that the Yeti, the abominable snowman, definitely has a basis in actual species and wildlife that live in that region. But I'm sure if you ask other people, they probably would say otherwise. So we never really, I'm sure that the chapter is not closed. I'm sure we will hear more about Yeti sightings and finds, or but I'm quite convinced though that they do not exist as some kind of undiscovered human-like creature.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Ah, she knows something. She knows something. Well, Michael, I think we're clinging rather desperately onto that 1% that David gave us. And as Charlotte says, yes, we don't know what we have not yet discovered.
Who knows? Maybe one day we'll find that missing piece of evidence that we're looking for. Until then, we want to hear from you. What do you think the Yeti could be? To send us a voice message, head over to funkidslive.com/mysteries and hit the big red button. Your message could be played on a future episode. We can't wait to hear from you.
And don't forget to join us again in 2 weeks' time for our next mystery.
Yes, from the heights of the Himalayas, we'll be going down to the deepest depths of the ocean to meet the legendary Marie Tharp and discover the mountains of the deep. Until then,
stay curious.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, which is made by the same people that make The Week Junior magazine. You can get 6 free issues of The Week Junior or 3 issues of The Week Junior Science and Nature for £5 by heading to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast offer.
Hey, it's Dan here. If you haven't heard, the Fun Kids Science Weekly is back. and bigger than ever. We hear all about the biggest stories in the world of science.
And so they realize, oh my gosh, I think what we're seeing is a newborn great white.
Find out which science is the best.
Wow, I thought that just sounded like such a cool career that I could get out there, visit different places in those different environments.
Put your questions to the experts.
How does a mobile phone contact another mobile phone without a wire?
Remember to send in your questions on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. That's the bigger and better Fun Kids Science Weekly every Saturday from wherever you get your podcasts.